Welcome back to the debrief. It's Dave O'Neill here, sitting in my car, but I'm not going anywhere, just hiding from my children. It is the COVID edition. I'm a Melburnian, so there's no live gigs, so I can't go to gigs and talk to comics. I've been taking to ringing comics, and it's been a good opportunity to talk to people that I don't normally get to chat to. And one of those people is one of the absolute legends of comedy, Hamish Blake, who I've got to say, I've worked on TV with him, and he really is in that category of like a one-off Graham Kennedy type. He's incredible to see work in front of you. He takes all the light. It's really interesting. Not many people come along like that. It's a once in a, not a lifetime, but there's only a few people every couple of, every 10 years or so that is as good as Hamish is at just, you know, improvising on TV and being that good. Let's call him up, see if he answers. I know he's a busy man, but he's in Melbourne, so he can't be that busy. It'll be zooming, zoom, zoom, zoom.
G'day, Dave. How are you going?
Hamish, how are you? Ahoy, as
ahoy,
you say.
Ahoy to you, sir.
We're recording. I record straight from the get-go. I've got to warn you.
I'll walk away from anyone disclosing confidential secrets in the background, which would just be my son spelling clock.
How old are your kids now? They're little, aren't they?
Yes, I've got a 3-year-old and a 6-year-old. So we're, because obviously Melbourne, we're back in homeschooling round two, baby.
It's terrible. I've got teenagers. I've got a grade 5 boy, but I've got 2 teenagers as well. And
how's your homeschooling round two going? Mate, I look at round one, and we were treating it like he was going to Harvard. And every assignment was done. It was uploaded. We were like, I was uploading 10 things a day. And literally, like, yeah, this is week one. And yesterday I went, oh, mate, sonny. No, we forgot to do today.
Upload.
We need to do schoolwork.
Yeah. I did say to my son, remember the first time I would upload all your assignments at the end of the week? We haven't uploaded anything. He's like, oh, the system's changed, Dad. I'm like, oh, okay, system's changed.
Oh, mate.
But I have three.
You can't take his word for it.
No, we can't. But we have three kids sitting at computers, and as one of my friends said, it's like whack-a-mole, because one starts up with a problem with the Zoom, or then they get settled and the next one pops up.
And it's so true, isn't it? And you just look at it. And the frustrating thing about when you're homeschooling at a prep level, like I don't want to brag, but I'm very capable. Across, like, none of it's tested me thus far, like alphabet order and stuff like that. But it's very hard to look at it with, like, you know, an adult's mind and really go, this is super important, mate.
Yeah.
Like, you're just tracing the letter W. It's like, mate, if you don't get it now, you will get it. Like, I don't know anyone that's like 50 going, look, I'm proficient with the alphabet, but I just could never nail the W, so I don't use them.
Well, you try when they get to year 8, when you have to do algebra with them, and then they always say, why are we doing algebra? I'll never use this ever. And you feel like saying, well, yeah, that's true, but then again, if you're a rocket scientist, you need algebra. So
I certainly do. But man, even a comedian, without realizing it, like, I mean, we could call Adam Spencer if you want to try and get another mathematician's point of view on this. But you know, a lot of math, like a lot of even comedy, you would know, is like, you know, a lot of it's kind of pattern recognition and you know, it's formulas. You know, without wanting to ruin too much of the magic, but a lot of it can be boiled down. And hey, that's algebra.
That's algebra. I got to remember that.
That's algebra, man.
That's algebra. Now I'm trying to. I always reminisce on this podcast when I first met the person I'm talking to, and I can't remember.
Oh, I've got it. I've got ours, but I don't think you would remember it.
Oh, okay. I'm intrigued.
Well, I started my radio career, Fox FM Melbourne, as a 20-year-old, I think I was. Maybe I was 19. And I was working on the breakfast show, Tracy and Matt. So Matt Tilley, Tracy Bartram. And at the time, I I think you were still you. I think you were Triple M Nights with Husey and Kate. Like,
no,
I think
we did. Guys... Yeah, we did Weekends, and we did. Oh, gee, I can't. Yeah, anyway,
but I think you'd just become the Nova Brekkie Show.
Yes,
and it was sort of that first year of Nova. Like, it was around 2001 sort of thing, and it was like early days of Nova, and it was. I mean, I was just like, couldn't believe that. You know, working at a radio station, you got to go and see movies for free. Like, you got to go to see a media screening, or like, you got to go. I was just blown away. And so every movie, I was like, let's do it. I'm there. And coming out of, it would have been something like The Hulk or.
Right.
Like some movie, like, you know, Edward Norton's The Hulk or whatever. Like, someone was going to do a junket, so you had to go and see the movie.
Yeah.
And it was at, it was in the city. It was like at Greater Union in the city. And I went and saw it with the Breakfast Show crew and Matt Tilley stopped on the way out to chat to you. And I just happened to be standing next to him. So I was just like, you know, I was like, oh, g'day. I'm the writer for the Breakfast Show.
Yeah.
In a few months' time, you'll know me as Street Bitch who does street stunts.
I didn't know you were a street person. Yeah, right.
Yes, street person these days. Times have changed.
Those screenings used to. I remember going to one, and it was for the first Bourne movie, and everyep. Everyone was there in this little. All the guys from the panel were there. There were hey people there. So it must have been 90s. Yeah. And then the movie was about to start, and then the curtain sort of opens, and Bert Newton walks in, and because he was doing GMA, and he stood at the front. And he went. Fatty Finn's about to start in a minute, and everyone laughed. That was a movie.
They're great fun, those screenings, because it was like, especially for like, because I was, you know, young, so you're often like, it's like going to the movies with a lot of your heroes.
Oh, it's
and
amazing.
Everyone's,
oh, it's
and everyone's making great,
yeah, like, great jokes.
At the screen. Yeah. It was like better than the movie.
Yeah, and so I sat next to Rogue, who I knew, and then Bert sat next to us, right, and the movie starts, and Bert's ruffling, he had a gym bag, and he was ruffling around in it. And he goes, hold these, David, hold these. And
he hands me a camcorder.
Yeah, no, he had polystyrene cups. And I'm thinking, oh, and it was like 11 a.m. I'm thinking, oh, Paddy's packed him a thermos or something.
He's got some chicken noodle soup.
No, he had a champagne. The top popped, and then he pours it and he goes, that's for you, that's for Roe, and fuck the rest of them. That's what he said.
What a great moment. I mean, it's probably because the ratings came in. Or something.
Yes.
You know, that time in the morning. And we're probably talking about the days when, like, GMA would have rated what sort of MasterChef does now.
Yes.
Like, that's how much TV shows. Like, it would have been drinking champagne because they've rated over a million or something at 11 in the morning. Or
did I hear a baby scream in the background just then? There was a baby screaming.
It's possibly a three-year-old just, I mean...
Oh, there they are. There they go.
They're playing Sylvanian Families.
My kids love Sylvanians.
Love them. And so,
and have you noticed they're named after the Australian ones are called Kylie and
they've given them a little culturally specific names.
Yes,
that's cool. One thing I had no idea about. You know, you would have had this with your kids. Where you go through like phases where you know, whatever. Like one kid's into the Wiggles, and then they're not. But then 4 years later, you come back to it, kind of thing.
Yeah.
Because I've got boy, girl, like Sunny. You know. Just, I'm sure, you know, just never, my little pony has not been, you know, a lot of the stuff my little girl's going through twice, like we're in second wave because Sonny went through it, but he didn't have a My Little Pony stage, but she's having a bit of a My Little Pony stage. And I mean, it's not possible for boys to have My Little Pony stage. I think they're called bronies, guys that are into My Little Ponies. So, you know, if boys are into that, that's totally cool. He just wasn't, but... Now that I'm in it, like, so I'm watching a few bit of My Little Pony, and like some of this, like, that is a weird world.
Weird show.
Weird world.
They're all weird. Thomas the Tank Engine's weird.
Like, it is, and even the classic, like, I mean, as everyone is, like, a huge fan of Bluey.
Bluey's
but
good.
Even, I mean, and Pepper's fine, but they all run into the weirdness. My favorite thing is watching in the animal-based shows. Like, even in Bluey, they run into this a bit. Like, there's an episode where Pepper and her classmates go to the zoo that I was watching recently.
Oh.
And I was like, how are they going to how are they going to handle this one? Because they're all animals. Like, one of the classmates is a zebra.
Yeah. There's my dad behind the bars.
It's Uncle Jeff. What are you doing in here? And so I was like, well, gee, this is a really tricky logic. Like, why have they chosen the zoo? And yeah. And what they end up doing is that only it's a zoo where it's just reptiles, basically just reptiles.
The reptile park. Yeah, right.
So it's not any of the mammals that that are in Pepper's class or teaching her French as Madame Gazelle.
They're all weird. Bob the Builder, I mean, he employs a scarecrow that helps him out. It's like, what's going on? All these non-union workers, it's just very odd.
Totally, totally. And I think even in Bluey they had a reference. I mean, I've become friendly with the guys at Mate Bluey who I think are, you know, they're legends.
Well, they're geniuses.
I've got to ask them about this because I think there was even one I was watching the other day where they referenced getting a cat.
Yeah, right.
Like as a pet. Like the Bluey and Bingo, the girls are like, oh, you know, maybe one day we're going to have a kitten. And I'm just like, how does that work in a world of dogs? Yeah. Terrified cat. terrified cat.
We still quote Bluey, the Bushwee. My partner Kieran claimed the best one is the Chinese takeaway one.
Well, oh, that's awesome, isn't it?
Yeah, well, they're too spicy for you is... too spicy just, for you.
Just forgot my... Like, just hearing when you've got your two-year-old yelling, oh, they've forgotten the spring roll.
Yeah.
And they have no idea what it means. Like, my three-year-old now does. Like, look at so many things that are inspired by Bluey. Now we can always get my daughter, who's just like, you know, out of nappies now. You can always get her to do a wee before we're leaving the house under the guise of it being a tactical wee.
And not a bush wee. They want a bush wee.
Yeah. Bush wee and a tactical wee, because that's what Bingo does.
Now, speaking of kids' TV, I've got to ask you about Lego Masters.
Go.
My kids, we watched every episode and they had some questions for you. Okay.
Okay, great.
So for people that don't know, maybe there's someone listening in France that doesn't know, you host a show where they compete to... It's an English format, isn't it? Where they compete to build Lego.
Yeah, it started off as a UK format. I've only ever seen one app of the UK format because that was when I was sort of like, you know, they were like, oh, would you be interested in hosting the show? And I had a look at it. And then I watched one app and I was like, oh, I don't know if this would work on Australian TV. And then they're like, actually don't watch any because we're not going to do it like that.
Yeah, right. Yeah.
So
yeah.
It's lovely, the UK show, and it works really well, but it's a very different, ours is very like, you know, razzle dazzle, like lighting changes while they're running to the brick pit. And the UK format with kids and adults building together. So just kind of was a much kind of gentler show.
Okay. So the questions are what happens to the Lego bricks when they finish? Do they just use them next year or?
Yeah, I mean, I think that was one of the reasons I was so excited that the show was successful in the first season, and we were going to do a second season because I'm happy to go completely unfiltered here and give you all the goss, but I assumed, well, so yes, the bricks just get locked up in storage. Like, the brick pit has 2 million pieces, 2.5 million elements, but they're not actually not all in the brick pit at one time. They're also behind the scenes being broken down from the previous build. Because sometimes, like some episodes, will go through about 100,000 bricks, so you got to break them down. Otherwise, like 10 episodes in, you'd be a million pieces down. So there's like a team of like 20 people. It's the worst job. I think everyone thinks it's exciting. Like there's a lot of uni students and stuff who are like, oh yeah, awesome, play with Lego all day. It's just breaking the builds apart and then reorganizing all the pieces. And I think it drives people a little bit insane.
It's hard.
They do that. Oh, it's hard, man. And they do it nonstop. And so then that's to replenish the brick pit, because 2.5 million pieces sounds like a lot, but you've got, there's over 5,000 different elements, like different shapes of Lego.
Yeah.
And then there's 30 colors. So you would need 150,000 pieces to just have one of everything in
there. Oh, yeah, wow.
So because you've got like, you know, some people use like 1,000 of the same piece, there's just got to be that kind of volume there. So yes, all the Lego just kind of gets stored away.
And
the show has to buy the Lego. I thought we would get it free.
They have to buy it.
Yeah, that's what I... So when they signed me up to do the show, I was like, you know, once I'd met everyone, we'll become friends and we're figuring out the show. Like one day in the production office, I went, all right, guys, you know, just let's talk turkey here. We're all grown-ups. How much is... You know, I was like, I've got my own production. We make shows. I'd love to know from a budget level, you know, nothing of this scale, but we've put a budget together before. I was like, how much is Lego paying for this? Like, this is what a masterstroke. I mean, it's a giant ad.
Yeah.
And they're like, no, we pay Lego.
We pay them. Wow.
We pay Lego for the license fee, and then we buy the Lego.
Yeah, that'd be expensive.
It's expensive. I think. I mean, I think they've got a deal on it. Like, I don't know. I think it's like
wholesale. They're getting wholesale. Yeah, yeah, sure.
They're not having to buy Harry Potter kits at retail that might break them apart.
There's not some guy on eBay going, I've got 4 Harry Potter kits. We only need 25 more. And look, I love Brickman, but my daughter in particular turned on him when he got rid of Summer and Summer and the girls.
The Iona.
Yeah, yep, the girls. Yep. But one of them was sick. So,
yeah.
But how?
I mean, it was a tough bounce.
It's tough.
It's one of those ones where, because I've obviously never done a reality show before, and we like to sort of take the piss a bit out of reality and
yeah, you do all which is good. You do a bit of fourth wall. You talk about the montages and stuff. Yeah, yeah.
Because we were like, people know what they're watching. They know it. Doesn't detract from the fun of the competition. No. But there are those moments where I genuinely go, I remember that we really are working on a reality show. So I'm like, what do we do? Like, what do we actually do here? And so luckily the EP and the producers and stuff, they've done their time on MasterChefs and Survivors and stuff. Like, they are pretty good at kind of calling it on the fly. So that was a tricky one because, it's a real shame the girls had to go home. But the way that the whole series is structured, it's like people have to go at certain times for it to all work out in the end. And then I think, I mean, even sort of Summer said at the end, she was like, wouldn't really be fair if anyone else went.
Yeah.
Really, a sad one, but yeah, no, I understand.
And do you, one of the other questions, do you get a say? Because Brickman obviously has a big say, but do you get a say in who stays or goes? Or
I thought I did.
Yeah.
Right. I assumed I would coming into the first season.
But no, right. Okay.
I actually assumed it would be rigged in the nicest possible way.
Yeah.
But I think coming out of like, commercial radio, I was like, all right, well, we've all seen contests, you know, like not rigged, but
they gear towards the best talent. They go,
that's the thing. It wouldn't have surprised me if they were like, look, you know, we've got to keep these people on the show or whatever. Like, I just fully expected it to be like that. So remember the very first elimination, the way we actually shoot it is we're sort of like, everyone kind of like rushes, the clock stops, everyone locks their stuff in. And then, because they've been working for so long, like, they do get to take breaks. So usually the contestants will get to go and, like, have a drink and take a break. And in that kind of, like, 20 minutes, that's where Brickman will really look at the stuff and, like, and organize it. So remember in that very first elimination, like, they all took a break. The executive producer walks onto the floor and I go to him and I go, right, okay, teammate, give us the bad news. Who's going home? I assume it's your call. And he's like, no. What do you reckon, Ryan? I'm like, oh, is it really Brickman's
call? Yeah, right.
I was like, don't tell me this is legit. Like, so it's 100% Brickman's. And then early on, like in season one especially, I was probably trying to influence him, but he just is, he's so good. He's like, you know, he's so good at Lego. He knows which things are difficult. I think that's the hard thing. The only time I reckon it gets confusing for viewers is it's like, he can tell what's been a very, very hard Lego thing to do.
Yeah, yeah.
And sometimes there are things that are like, they just look impressive and they look amazing, but someone's done a more difficult Lego thing. And I reckon that's what,
yes.
Yeah, like they've taken a big risk that could have easily, could have really failed. And he does tend to like, reward risk a little bit.
Well, my daughter's quite him around the house. You caught my attention and then you kept my attention. That's one of his great statements.
Is that your instructions for the birthday present you need to get her?
Yeah.
I want something that grabs my attention and then keeps
my attention. And the only other question was, who did he vote for in the final thing? Because he never said, because the hipsters won. And they were the kids' favourite, the long-haired guys from Perth.
Love Jackson and Alex.
Yeah, I'm glad you remember their names.
Love them.
Yeah. And they were a good combination of creativity and, you know, engineering or whatever.
I'm not sure. He never says who he voted for, but I'm almost positive that I think it was quite overwhelming.
It had to be them.
So it might. Right. I don't even know if his vote would have swung it anyway. So they were in the end. I think it was like the Andrew and Damien were like very close too. Like their big robot battle was awesome. But I think once people sort of sat in there too, like that, especially being in the flesh with that,
that's,
the mad scientist.
That's different again. Yeah, that's different again. You can't tell
it
that
from just
home.
It was just amazing. Like, and it was. The thing I loved most about it, like as you work on the show, it's really a show about ideas and having an idea under pressure, which we all know is a really hard thing to do.
Tough.
So That was what I think, kind of, the more you thought about it, the more you were like, wow, Jason Alex have not, they haven't just built a thing. They've built something that you would never expect to see.
Yeah.
And not taking anything away from Andrew and Damien, like, they did, like, geez, pretty flawless Colosseum in a robot battle. Yeah, like, yeah, that was awesome. But, you know, if someone said to you there was a robot battle built on Lego Masters, you would go, okay, that's the kind of thing I'd expect to see on a show like that. To have a mad scientist in a steampunk robot breaking out of a mountain, yeah, and terrorizing a town, like, it was just very unique.
It's
and
just I think more that's of what, an original, more of an original idea.
I think that's what everyone sort of gravitated towards. Yeah, and but you know, those guys deserve to win. Again, everyone took the comp seriously, but they really, like, you know, they trained before they came on. Like, they and I don't know how much it comes across in the edit, because you can, you know, I'm in the room with them for 15 hours and it's 1 hour show, but they were just like really disciplined as well.
Yeah, right.
And I love, and then, and like excellent team members to each other, like really fun dudes.
And supportive of the other crews too. They were good.
Really lovely. Yeah, like lovely exactly guys. Who you want on the show. And really supportive of each other and kind of pushed each other to the right limit level and kind of like loved what the other guy was doing and good teammates. And
yeah. Would you go home in that and have a break, or would you just stay there? I said to the kids, no. I reckon Hamish would stay there.
Oh, no, yeah, I'm there. Yeah, yeah, but the funny thing is, I just assumed that's what it would be. But, you know, because we've really got, like, you do the start, you go. Like, I know I'm obviously going to say you've got half, you know, you're halfway through and then you've got 1 hour to go. But apart from that, it's like, it's all a little bit fluid. Like, so I'll go on and off the floor. Like, I can leave the room and then I'll go and just sit out the back on a couch and you watch the monitor. But I'm never far away, because if something happens, it's kind of, that's the fun part, to just jump in and go, what's going on? I don't know if that's the, I think they just did the American version and we had the American producers go like, how do you do it? And I was telling them, I was like, well, you're hosting stuff and then you just kind of hang around and you can be around as needs be, and they're like, right,
well, that's probably not going to work for them. Yeah,
like, that's not how we would do it in America.
Yeah,
like, oh, okay, well, I'll just hang around for days and that's just eating chips out the back.
The only thing I can think of that we've done together is the Spicks and Specks Christmas shows, which used to
speaking of hanging around for days,
they would go for 8 hours, 5 hours, I don't know, from go to work.
They were epic production. And because Spicks was like, you know, it became such a beloved show and it had, you know, the cast was like family, I suppose. Those Christmas shows always felt like the full school musical.
Yes.
Like 50 of your favorite classmates all doing something at the end of the year. It was very funny.
And I talked to your mum a lot. Your mum used to come along a bit.
Big fan of. I think she was just slinking around trying to run into Kerry O'Brien, but she was always happy to hang out and watch Spicks.
Well, she was single. Yeah, she told me that at the time. I remember talking to her. Your mum, and I met your brother, and I met your sister. Will that be right?
Yeah.
Geez, I met all your family. Well, you must have been. You were on it a lot. I was on it a lot too, and you were on it.
I think you and I were up there for alternating weeks.
Yes, basically. And you were going to beat me in the record, but then you signed to Channel 9, and then your numbers dropped right down because you signed.
You managed to slink through the last season.
They couldn't have you on anymore because of your 9 stuff. But
which was a bit of a bummer. So, but it was so much fun, man. What a great time.
What a great show. And so the only person I haven't met is your dad. But I remember your dad. You told me about your dad because I remember hearing him on your radio show. He's a plumber. Is that right? Or a plumber? Some sort of plumber?
Qualified plumber. He doesn't like when they call him a plumber because he...
He runs a business, doesn't he, or something?
Yeah, he has his plumbing license. I mean, he's retired now, but he was a sprinkler installer, so he would...
Right.
He would, you know...
So that's a real job, Hamish. That's a real
irrigation
job.
Irrigation specialist. Oh, mate, don't I know it? I mean, from the time I was about 13 or 14, that would be my, like, casual job, is going to dig holes with Dad. And... just go, I can't believe you do this every day, Dad. But it was actually great for a pretty like sheltered, middle class suburban white kid. It was actually good. I'm really glad I spent those, you know, every now and again. I actually understood what a building site was like and like what actually having a real job was like to scare me straight. So when I got into comedy, I just hung on for dear life. So I never had to dig holes or do meaningful work.
Absolutely. My dad was, he was a trades, he was a fitter and turner. So it's very similar kind of work. And he would bring us to his workplace and you're like, oh my God, I don't think I ever want to do this.
Relentless. And do you still, like, how old were you when you did that?
Oh, he got us jobs in factories from about the age of 12 after school, like sweeping and stuff like that.
Yeah.
Up until 20. Yeah.
It's, do you look at it though and realize that it was actually extremely valuable exposure to the real world?
Yes. Well, it's funny because having teenagers now and living in the inner city, and they've got very, very middle-class lives, these kids of mine. But one of the dads at school sent his kid to a fish farm in Tasmania for his work experience and said it was the best thing because he's never going to end up working on a fish farm. But for two weeks to see what these guys do for a job is really important.
Yeah. 100%. Really, that's a really smart idea, isn't it? I hadn't really thought of that because...
Well, it's a long way off for you with your kids, but yeah.
Well, when I did work experience, the goal was you work at an aspirational job. Like, yes. You know, we had like people trying to go and work at Channel 9.
Radio stations.
All you do is just pepper all the places you want to work. But as a parent, that's exactly what you should be doing. You should be going, I want you to, like you said, like, maybe you're never going to work in a fish farm, but you need to hang out with the people who do and realize that they're exactly the same as you and me. And... They're working hard.
Yeah, and they've just had different opportunities and different. Now the thing about your dad though is that, correct me if I'm wrong, he doesn't laugh much. And you used to try and
he doesn't tough nut to crack.
Yeah, yeah. You used to try and get. I think we had Hilsey on there trying to make him laugh.
That's right. We did on our radio show trying to get dad laughing and
he wouldn't
tough gig, and then he'd just go and he'd say stuff like, you know. Well, I can obviously see the humour in what you're saying, but I'm not. It's not triggering the laughter impulse in me.
That is really interesting because you're so funny. Maybe that's why you became a comedian, because of your dad.
I mean, I think it was like, dad was my brick wall. You know how, like, you know, Don Bradman grew up just hitting a ping pong ball against a brick wall? Like, dad was my brick wall, just constantly trying to get a ride out of it. Getting my eye in with no response from the brick wall. But it's funny because it's dad. Yeah, dad will occasionally go, you know, he'll hear of what's going on. Like, we talk all the time, but he's just got no concept of
show business. Yeah.
Of show business. Yeah. but that's fine. Like, you know, he's a quirky guy. Like, they've got a place down, like a little place they kind of like long-term rent in, like a corner. It sounds fancy, but it's not. Like, it's a kind of a corner of a farm in Red Hill, and it's just like this little two bedroom kind of cottage. And my dad and my stepmom love it down there. And he calls me the other day and he goes, "Mate, do you want to bring something? I've made a billy cart."
Made a billy cart.
I said, "Oh, great." He goes, "Yeah, I've been." He goes, "I wanted to do it for a while, and I've got all the stuff together, and I've finished. It's pretty bloody good. I'm pretty happy with this billy cart." And I was like, "Oh, this is a very..." I mean, dad hasn't done like a lot of the classic grandpa stuff. Like,
no.
You know, this isn't just another example of dad like taking him fishing or whatever. Like, hasn't really done much of that stuff. So I was like, "Great, send me a video of it. Send me a video." And it's like, sure enough, he's made a billy cart and he's like riding it from the top of the driveway, like this gravel driveway, like down into the carport. And then I text back, I was like, "Dad, is that an adult size billy cart?"
Oh, right.
Yeah, it is. But, you know, I can take the kids on my lap. He hasn't really built it for the grandkids.
No, he built it for himself.
He's built it for a 120-kilogram man.
That's quite quirky.
He's good.
Now, I'll ask you the question. I ask everyone the same three questions, Hamish, so get ready.
I'm ready.
Because you're probably busy. You've got to go. What was the question? Hang on. What was the last thing you cooked? Sorry.
I don't know when this goes out, but I've got a mate of mine, Ben Shuri, who runs Attica, which is a very fancy restaurant. One of the top 10 in the world. Yeah. And so in lockdown, Ben and I have been doing a thing, which was an idea just to go, "Hey, if I cook something on Instagram Live, would you cook along?" And we've been doing like Instagram Live cook along. So he's in his kitchen, I'm in my kitchen. We like split screen it over.
But he's
Instagram.
Quite fancy though, isn't he?
The funny thing is Ben's just a lovely, you know, Ben grew up as well, like working class Kiwi. Funnily enough, like his first job was made at a pub that made New Zealand's biggest nachos. Not best, just biggest. So he's gone.
Claim to fame. Yeah.
He's gone from making like these giant platters of nachos was his first job, to you know, now cooking degustation of this, you know, an incredible menu. But Attic, look, Attic is an amazing, but at the moment it's sort of, they're just doing
takeaway. I saw that in the paper.
So the last thing I cooked was last night. Ben and I did another one of our cook-alongs, and it was, so it was pretty elaborate. I mean, it's going to sound very good. It was a deep-fried camembert. It was fancy cheese on toast. Deep-fried camembert and an omelette.
Oh, nice.
But it was a lot of fun because I have no idea. Like, I can't do it, but it's very fun to try and keep up with Ben. And he's just such a good, he's a very good teacher. So he, I think, has a lot of fun, you know, trying to, like, explain cooking to me at a level that is even like, below what he would assume a low level is.
Yeah, right.
Like, we had a real issue last night where we were meant to be deep frying this cheese, and I've got all this oil in. And he's like, you know, you got to turn up till it's sort of bubbling. And I was just like, man, it's just not bubbling. Like, and we're on live, we're on Instagram. Like, I'm so sorry. Like, maybe something's wrong with the stove. I don't know. And we just went round and round and round in circles until Ben's just like, I just can't believe it's been heating that long and it won't bubble. I said, mate, have a look at it. And he goes, we haven't put anything in it. I said, what do you mean? He goes, well, it won't bubble until you put something in it. Like, it's just hot oil. I was like, oh, mate, I thought it was meant to boil like water. Oh. And so, sure, you know. So that was 10 minutes wasted. But that's the level. That's the level we're at.
Who knew that? I didn't know that. And I've been cooking for years.
I'm like, I'm just thinking of fish and chip shops, and you see like the fryer going crazy.
Yeah.
Bubbling, but that's because it's got something in it.
Stuff in it.
Turns out. So you're always learning.
You're cooking. Okay, next question. What was the last thing you watched or listened to? Like...
Well, I think everyone's redoing stuff. We just redid Fargo.
Oh, I haven't watched that yet.
You didn't watch it, mate. Fargo, the TV show, is unreal.
It's great.
There's three different seasons. Like, we've just redone the second one for the, you know, we just watched it for the second time. But, mate, it's sort of like, in the absence of anything kind of else spectacular on the moment, like, it's just
I gotta
so
watch good. It. We've been rewatching Pie in the Sky.
Remember Pie in the Sky?
It's a British show with the big fat chef. It's Mr.
Okay,
the bloke from Harry Potter. You know,
he's really old school. That is right. And he runs a food shop.
Yeah, and he's a cop. He's a cop.
Oh, he's a cop. He's a cop. That's right. And he's with the white beard. That's
yeah,
right.
Richard. Yeah, he's from Harry Potter. He's the dad from Harry Potter. Yeah.
Oh, shit. That's so funny. That was from the 90s.
90s, yeah.
With all the TV that's available to watch,
yeah,
like, watching cannot
Pie
believe
in the Sky.
We're in like the golden era of TV. We've got like
it's pretty good.
Like, oh, mate, I remember how flustered he was often as he like walked through a doorway and sat down heavily at a kitchen table to talk.
Well, he just wants to cook omelets and stuff, but his boss keeps getting him to solve crimes. It's a terrible
that's
dilemma.
Right. And he, isn't he cooking at home, and then he'll get a call. And...
Yeah, now he's always cooking in his restaurant, and the junior cop turns up and says,
"That's right." Was he semi-retired?
He's meant to be retired, but they keep him hanging. His boss keeps him hanging on.
Because they just like something's come back up from when he was on the force.
Yes,
it's all coming back to me. My parents loved that show.
Pie in the Sky. It's all on YouTube. It's just. I don't know. My wife finds it after a very busy day very, very comforting. It's like
I'm surprised it's not on like Microfish or something.
It's on floppy disks, mate. It's on floppy disks.
Yeah, but it's all, you can read it all off
Pie
in Grave
Sky. It's a great show.
Pie in the Sky. Well, do you know what? I think there is. I was reading the other day. There's a big resurgence, especially, you know, in COVID, with everyone just going back to essentially what you're saying, like a warm hug of a TV show, a comforting embrace. Everyone's watching Friends again. Everyone's doing the US Office.
Well, I swear, everything you look on Netflix, it says dark, moody. It has the same. You put on even sitcoms, it says dark, moody. You're like, I just want something light. I don't want something dark and moody.
That's the thing, yeah. We just need, and do you do the same thing too? Where you watch, so we'll watch Fargo, which is pretty grim, but then like it's an amazing show, and then we'll just have to
watch something.
You just need a palate cleanser, like you need like an Arrested Development or just flush it out before you go to bed.
Yeah, yeah. Or in my world, Dad's Army, whatever.
Jesus, do you think you are kidding, Mr.?
Which I did watch the other night. It was very funny. But it's fair to say that show wouldn't get up these days. Imagine going to the ABC. I've got a show with 10 blokes Any women? Yeah. No women.
No, all white guys.
Any people of colour? No people of colour. Just no. Hear me out. 10 blokes over 50, and
and pretty right, like pretty casually racist from what I remember.
Yes, yes. Now, last question. What was the last bit of human contact you had? I assume that's your family.
Well, with my daughter 3 minutes ago, just while we were talking about pie in the sky, just came in, picked up a half vodka off the table and handed it to me. And I went, that's mummy and daddy's special table, mate. Thank you. Because I was just quietly put that back out of reach. So that was my was the last bit of human contact. But I'll take that. That's one of my favorite.
That's good.
It could be quite a sad question if you're chatting to anyone that's sort of, solitary at the moment.
Well, Kitty Flanagan said it was a woman in the deli. So, it's...
that's a good snapshot.
So, it's different for different people,
It is. It's a nice question. It gives you a good little snapshot.
Well, I should let you go, but I've been listening to your podcast, and that's been very entertaining. So, everyone, it's always number one or two on the charts. So everyone, have a listen to that. Hamish and Andy.
Oh, thank you, man. Our loyalty cards went out this week, which is very exciting.
Oh, wow. You got loyalty cards.
I've got loyalty cards. We invented a loyalty card. We changed the loyalty game by making it 10% off any store worldwide.
Mm-hmm.
Right? And rather than having to call stores, will you be, it just seemed like a heck of a lot of red tape. And we're like, we're just going to start from the premise that everyone's in. If you do run it, you can go to our website and let us know stores that are on board
and not on board.
And because everyone is on board, I suppose there's no such thing as not being on board. But we have heard of some stores having teething problems as they are presented with the Hamish and Andy loyalty card that promises 10% off every store worldwide. But the benefit of our loyalty card is this is where we've changed the game. You get 10% off, then immediately you give the store half of that. You give them 5%. So
it's only 5% store gets
you get 5% off. They get 5%. Everybody wins. It's the card the stores love.
It's the greatest scheme I've ever heard. But
everyone gets a taste.
One thing I did want to talk to you about briefly is that something has slipped into your world that's also slipped into my world because I do radio with Sam Pang and then Mick Malloy occasionally, and that is golf. And that real 10 years ago. Who'd be talking about golf on radio or podcast? Now, you've got Andy who plays, he's a mad golfer.
Mad golfer. And I suspect he's just constantly slipping in references that he quickly then sends to Titleist or whoever so he can get three clubs.
Yeah, and Glenn Robbins, who I do a podcast with, mad golfer. And yet 10, 15 years ago, we wouldn't be talking about golf.
No, it'd be the number. I mean, it was all about relatability back in our day. Yeah. It'd be the number one way to separate yourself from the common man.
Yes.
To be golfing.
Guys, don't talk about golf for you guys.
Before we go, can I just share with you? I mean, I hope I'm not talking out of school here, but speaking of being, speaking of that whole, don't alienate your listeners because no one's really thinking about golf. I think that's just the syndrome of guys like Pang, Malloy, Robbins, Andy. More just going, I don't care. I'm just going to talk about what I like talking about. I think the same principles of relatability probably still apply, but it's more that they've just stopped caring.
You know what my plan is to go and get lessons at the local public course for 2 years.
Think you're doing that.
Yeah, and then we just turn up one day and just blow them away.
Yeah, I was thinking of doing it. I was thinking, because I'm 38, right? I'm 40 next year,
perfect,
December.
Perfect golfing age.
Said to Andy, because I cycle too, so I'm like, look, we're tit for tat. I've got a middle-aged male, unnecessarily expensive hobby. You've got one. We're even Stevens.
Yeah.
But I was like, I'm saving golf for my 40s. But I was just going to secretly go, hey, mate, day after my 40th birthday, let's go out. I'll have my first go and then just hopefully be amazing. But I think the annoying thing about golf is it's quite hard to be amazing.
It is hard, yeah.
So it's not quite the same as like learning a sleight of hand magic trick or something like that. So
that you could do in 24 hours intensely, but golf.
Can I leave you? I know you want to wrap it up, but just on the relatable, this is just a little snapshot into the world of radio. One of my favorite bits of audio that's deleted, so it only exists in anecdote form, was so
Monty, who now does, who's on Kiss FM, good friend of ours. Whipper, who's one of my best mates. He's a fits in Whipper, Nova Brecky show. And Ryan Shelton, who is also one of my best mates from childhood. They used to do the Nova Drive show.
They did Nova Drive and we did Nova Breakfast in Melbourne. Yeah, that's right.
Yeah, so they were Ryan, Monty and Whipper and produced by Tommy Ivey, who's also one of our best mates. So all very kind of incestuous. They did a show from LA one time. And Whipper went to, you know, Scotch College in Melbourne. You know, and Monty was always a bit worried that he would be coming across a bit too elite.
Yeah.
And a bit...
Talk about golf.
Yeah, just a bit alienating. I was just talking about Range Rovers and RM Williams. And stuff. So she was always on the lookout to go, hey, we're, you know, we, that's not everyone's reality. Let's just be careful about that. And Whipper was always like, mate, no one cares. Doesn't matter. And it was always a little slight source of friction between them. And there was a great break that they were recording. They were like recording a show from LA. And so they had to record it. They couldn't go live. They're in the hotel room. And there's, they start talking, they're sort of talking for about a minute. And Whipper mentions how on the plane, you know, there was something to do with the olives he got on the plane.
Oh, yeah.
And Monty just goes, stop. Can't talk about olives. Yeah. Can't talk about olives. And Whipper goes, what are you talking about? And she goes, you can't mention olives, mate. I mean, that's not, you've got to say peanuts or something else. Like, that's not reality for our listeners. And Whipper goes, I think people know what olives are. There was a great, for us, it always comes down to, it's forever known as the olives peanuts. Golf is olives.
You can talk about olives. It's funny because
I think you can talk about olives.
When Andrew Denton told me when he first started on Triple M in Sydney in the 80s, he sat down with the head of Triple M. He said, tell me about my audience. And the guy just said, never been on a plane. He's like, what? He goes, I've never been on a plane. Because back then, planes were too expensive for working class people.
Yeah, there was no Jetstar. People were going to Bali on Tiger.
So, yeah, that's what they said, never been on a plane. But we had great, you know, our boss would come in and say, guys, this morning you were talking about World War II. You got to ask your question. Does a plumber in Croydon give a fuck about World War II? No.
I hope so.
Don't talk about it.
I mean... It's only been 60 or 70 years. Like, I hope we're still grateful.
Does a plumber in Croydon give a fuck about World War II? Apparently not.
Pretty different to the recruitment ads that they would have been running in 1943.
It's like the old olives and, because Kate got told off for saying she had an accountant, I remember once. No, listening has accountants. Did I mention accountants?
That was the whole radio game, trying to constantly say, like, constantly guess who this average person was, which isn't real.
Like, no, it doesn't exist.
Everyone's got weird stuff. No one's lunching for the dial, because you said olives, and that's not their preferred snack. People get it.
Funny
stuff.
We make ourselves laugh. Anyway, good on you, Hamish. Thanks for talking to me.
Anytime, man,
check out Hamish's podcast. Everyone knows about it. So.
Oh yeah, it's fine. I mean, no. I think they're on the premium podcast here.
Yeah. They know. Hey, Hamish Blake, ladies and gentlemen.